This is the interview with Ms. Eleanor Beers for the Youngstown State University Oral History Project dealing with the Rayen School. It's being done by Mark Conley at Ms. Beers' residence on North Heights, 240 North Heights. And it's being done on November 8, 1974. It's approximately 3:30. Okay, Ms. Beers, would you please talk a little bit about your background, your family background, and also especially your educational background?
I was born in Youngstown. My father was a doctor, general practitioner in town. And incidentally, my oldest brother became a doctor, practiced in Warren quite a few years. Went through public schools here in town. Elm Street School, which is no longer in existence, Rayen High School, actually Lee Rayen School. Then I went to College of Worcester for a short time. And since I couldn't have a German major at Worcester, I transferred to the University of Michigan, where I majored in German. I graduated from Michigan in the thick of the Depression of the 30s, and I had wanted to teach. I had a teacher certificate, but there were no jobs available, so there were many, many people on relief at the time, and they needed relief caseworkers, so almost anyone fresh out of college could become a caseworker, which I became for, and kept that job for approximately a year. Then the next year, there was an opening at Harding Elementary School in sixth grade. And though I had no elementary training, my training had all been for German teaching in high school, I undertook to teach sixth grade at Harding. And that year was an eye-opener for me.
In what ways?
Well, I didn't know what to expect of the children. The age I wasn't too familiar with, 11-year-olds in sixth grade. I had something that would be regarded as a great advantage, but in some ways maybe it was a disadvantage. I had a very bright class, and I felt that for the first few weeks, they were ahead of me in every way. One thing I'll never forget was that I dismissed the class. The school is all on one floor. And I dismissed the class, as usual, at 3:15, 3:30. And one or two of them went out the window. And I was aghast. I stood there. Didn't know what to do. People don't do this. So I don't know how I handled it the next day, but I think I spent some waking hours trying to figure out what I was going to do with those kids and see that it didn't happen again. That was my trouble. I was afraid I wasn't going to have discipline. Everybody said, well, until you have discipline, you have nothing. Once you have discipline, everything else comes. So that got straightened out, and I got the students to working. The hard thing was to keep them busy all the time because they were bright. It was a very bright group. Then it came back to me via another teacher that, that new teacher, she lets them get away with everything. They go in and out the windows. So that was one of my memories, or is one of my memories of my first year of teaching. And I taught there for 5 years, and I never felt really at home with elementary work because, well, I hadn't been trained for it. I hadn't intended to do that. My first love was German, and certainly in high school level. So that was, but I always thought it was a good thing to have had that elementary experience, because high school teachers tend to blame all the deficiencies on the elementary school. Well, if they teach them to do this, if they teach them to read, if they teach them this and that and the other thing, or if they weren't so permissive or whatever in grades, we wouldn't have all this trouble. Well, I could see from my own personal experience what the grade teachers were going through, elementary teachers. Mm-hmm. And I knew that most of them were doing the best they could. And it's just very easy to blame the preceding school or teachers for whatever you find wrong when you get the students.
When did you go to the Rain School?
I went in 1940, and it was through the retirement of my own German teacher. I had studied with Miss Edna Richards, and I always thought she was such a wonderful teacher that I became very much interested in German, and that continued all my life. So when she retired, I started there as German teacher, along with Miss Boynton. She had some classes and I had others, but I always had to have quite a few English classes because there weren't enough German classes.
Now, a couple points. First of all, you say you graduated from Michigan in the midst of the Depression.
Right.
How did you go about financing a college education in the Depression? This might seem a little bit off the subject to you, but it's interesting.
Well, I was fortunate enough that my father was able to keep me in college. And although we had our difficulties as well as almost everybody else, but I was able to continue through college. Then my graduate work I earned myself for my teaching. I went to summer school many years. I think altogether I had about 13 years of summer school.
Where was this at?
Oh, I took quite a few courses off and on down here at the university, before it was university, Youngstown College. Mm-hmm. And then I went to Ohio State in the summers, and that was an 11-week term. That was really the whole summer from the time school was out for me teaching until almost Labor Day when we started in the fall. And I worked on a master's degree in English. I switched to English because there weren't many openings in German. And I had just a minor in English before, and I was having to teach English, even more English than German. So I took the German work at Ohio State in the summer, my master's degree in 39.
Another interesting thing, which I wasn't aware of, was that you were a student at the Rand
yeah,
School,
I
too.
Went to Rand. Yeah.
Okay, so you don't mind, we'll talk a little
and
bit.
And some of my colleagues, of course, then as I began to teach, had been my teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that was interesting was that I got quite a few students that I had taught in the sixth grade over at Harding. I got them again. Sometimes it was a happy reunion, and other times not exactly for them or me.
Okay, so if you don't mind, we'll talk a little bit about your student days at the Rand School. Just
all
a
right,
little bit.
Right.
Okay.
Well, to get back, though, you're talking about the summer. Do you want to come back to that? Because I did other summer school work, if you want.
Oh, sure. Okay,
yeah,
fine.
Well, later on, I wanted to take more German work, and much later. And so I went up to Middlebury College. You know Middlebury College, Middlebury, Vermont. It's a liberal arts college, good school. But in the summer, they turn the whole campus over to languages. They have five or six languages going, and it's very rigorous. You sign a pledge that you will not use in any form any language but the language you're studying, except in a store to purchase something, and you have to there. But among yourselves and all your life there, absolutely no English. It has to be the foreign language you're studying, and meet with your professors and so on. Besides, take some very demanding courses. Well, I like that. I really love that place. And the atmosphere was very beautiful and very invigorating and inspiring. So I went there several summers and then interrupted that study for NDEA scholarships, Defense Education Act, that were offered for teachers, and went to the University of Wisconsin one summer. The following summer, went to Germany for 9 weeks and under the NDEA program. That was, both of those summers were very valuable to me. Well, that's about the story of the summer, summer school.
Okay. Now, do you want to talk a little bit about your school experiences?
Well, you mean as a student?
Yes. If possible, compare, for example, let's say, talk about the teachers at the Rain School when you were there as a student, when you started your career as a teacher and when you finished your career as a teacher. You could draw a comparison and contrast.
When I was a student, Rain had a very outstanding faculty. They're not equally outstanding, that's never so, I believe, in a school, but many very fine teachers.
What years were these?
1926 through 29. And, for example, in, well, I felt that my German teacher was outstanding, Miss Richards. The French teacher, Miss Miriam Thomas, was noted throughout the state. She was a very fine teacher. There were some excellent Latin teachers, and incidentally, there were at one time at least four, maybe five, full-time Latin teachers at Rand. And that was when I was going to school there. Latin fell off to the point where there's one part-time Latin teacher now, maybe has a couple classes. That's kind of an indication of change.
What was the attitude of the students toward Latin when you were there?
Well, they had to take it to get to college. If you get into college, you had to take it. But there were many students that really liked it very much. I preferred German. I liked the modern language. But you still get an argument that, well, Latin is more valuable than the modern language. This is still a current topic of controversy. And I think Latin is valuable. I have to see it die out. Modern languages are dying out now, as far as I know. I hope not dying out, but they are falling out.
You were talking about the faculty.
Well, let me get back to the title. Well, I got onto Latin. Well, Miss. You want names?
Sure. Names.
Miss Marie Seeger was. Very fine Latin teacher, very strict, demanding, very good. Was Miss Catherine Smith. When I was in high school, two of the best known Rand teachers, very fine teachers, were nearing retirement. Miss Lida Baldwin and mathematics, and Ms. Sarah Jane Peterson, and those are very familiar names to older people around Youngstown.
What was your opinion about those two teachers?
Well, I didn't have either one in class. I was scared to death of Mrs. Peterson, but I, for no real good reason, it was just, you're just supposed to be. Miss Baldwin, I didn't know, but I knew other faculty members who had such a tremendous admiration for her that I came to share it. I realized she was certainly a superior person and a very fine teacher. And she was demanding, but from all I've ever heard, very fair. And the problems the kids did, those two got up an algebra book for advanced algebra, college algebra, they called it, I think. That was just fantastic, the difficulty of the problems that they had. So, they were demanding, very fine characters and fine teachers.
Now, how does this compare with, say, the teachers at Rain in 1940 when you got there?
Well, 1940, several of my own teachers were still there. Because there were new ones. Standards were still very high, and standards change. In a school like Rand, it takes a long, long time. All through the 40s, maybe on into the 50s, students were coming in and paying tuition, coming in from the suburbs, from Liberty, and Liberty Township, even other suburbs, to attend Rand. They had to pay tuition to go there. Then it was a shock to me to find the reversal. It was, for a while, some Rand students were paying tuition to go out there.
When did you notice this?
I couldn't say exactly. Maybe 10, maybe 15 years ago. I may be wrong on that time. But it was a shock to me to see that they didn't pay to come to Rand anymore. Some of them were paying to get out of going to Rand because of the changes that have been taking place.
What sort of changes did you notice?
We had fewer students in the college preparatory group, and those were the people that were likely to want their children to get such a foundation that they get into a good college. And so that was without reason. Finally, the non-college preparatory kept growing as the college preparatory classes decreased. And then, I hate to get into it, but it is certainly present, the racial problem was there. And I saw a great change the day after Martin Luther King was assassinated.
In what way?
It was a great change. The black people were very excited, very much excited and incensed. And the first I was aware of anything going on was during the lunch period of that day. And I heard this loud noise that I'd never heard before in school. And it was just a surging noise. What's that? And I walked out of my class, as we always did, and we were just trained to do that. If there's anything unusual going on, go to your door and step out and see what's, because the teachers in the hall help control situations. And so this mob of black students heading up the hall. And this had started down in the cafeteria. They were having their, finishing their lunch. It started down the cafeteria. It came surging through the hall, right toward me. I thought, what am I going to do? I don't know what's up here. Screaming, yelling. When they got up, I just stayed there. I didn't want to run away. And I was curious anyway. I wanted to see what they were going to do. So as they got up toward me, I could see that they were laughing. They weren't acting especially angry. And instead of heading down into my corridor, they went up the ramp, which was in front of me, and took them up to the second floor. They all turned and went up the ramp. Well, there was nothing much happened that day, really. School. This was unusual, this mob action. Something starting in the cafeteria. I think something was said. Someone incited the students. They were already tense, ready for anything because of the atmosphere from the assassination. And they marched through the halls. And I think most of them were just sort of having a good time, really. Mm-hmm. It wasn't anything to be alarmed about. However, parents began hearing all kinds of rumors about the horrible things that were going on at Rand School that afternoon. And that the white children were being attacked. And, just everything imaginable was supposed to be going on that afternoon. And some parents came up. I remember talking with one mother. She says, I came up to see for myself after all I heard. And I said, well, you can see. This was later in the day. I said, as you can see, there's nothing. We're just having classes as usual. After school, there was more mob business out in the on the street and in the yard, and some attempt to rock one of the teachers' cars, and there were police around, and we were a little worried then. But as a result of that, many students left Rand School of the new college preparatory student, because a lot of those rumors, I think, stuck. You know, you heard it, and those awful things did happen that I know did not happen. It was, I saw a great decline. My department, my German department, had been growing up to that point. From then on, it fell with a bang. So I just dated it from that day.
Did you ever notice any sort of racial disturbances before this period? Before, say, the assassination of Martin Luther King?
It's hard for me to tell just when things happened. It came out in the open more. There was hostility, and there still is hostility among many black students, and that was one of the things that bothered me so much. I wanted them to learn, and any teacher that's worth his salt wants everybody to learn. Doesn't matter color, background, anything about them, you want them to learn. And they had a feeling, I think, that if you're white, you hate them, and they must hate you back, and they hate you first. So you have this hostility to get through that is very difficult to cope with.
Would you say there's almost actual resistance to learning?
Right. Definite resistance to learning.
Were there many blacks attending Ray when you went there to school?
Not many. There were quite a few. But I couldn't say what percentage might have been, but there weren't really very many attending. I guess maybe when I went to school, I think they had to. It was, education was compulsory through high school, I think. I'm not sure when that came in.
So there were what you would consider lower class blacks going to school when you were going?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Poor, usually poor. And there were, I remember being in classes with them, and I thought it was very good for a person to associate with a variety of the kinds of people.
Now, in the 40s, did you notice anything, any hostility or any resistance? You probably don't notice resistance
there
anymore.
There was resistance, but what made the hostility come out the open was larger numbers. So you get a preponderance of a group. They give each other confidence, which they didn't have when they were such a minority.
Obviously a lot of white students left. What effect did a preponderance of black students have on the white students who remained? Did you notice any change in
Not
that?
Not too much. I don't think there was too much. Every once in a while there'd be some little trouble with a very minor sort between the blacks and whites.
What about the administration? How did they handle the black problem as it became a black problem?
I think very well. I think it's hard for me to say just how they handled it. But certainly every effort was made to show that every student had an equal chance. There was not any favoritism. So I really couldn't comment definitely on to say how they handled it.
What about the attitude of the teachers as a whole? Were they getting a little bit disgusted, or was there reaction?
The teachers as a whole just want people to learn, and if there are people that just resist learning, it makes them unhappy. That's about all I can say on that.
Well, did you notice a turnover of teachers, quicker turnover of teachers during the 50s and 60s than, say, you did during the 30s?
I believe so, yeah. I think there were more. Another change that made a difference was when I started to teach, married women weren't allowed to teach. And so with a young lady got married, she automatically left the profession. Now they keep on teaching. That makes a difference. But they may go somewhere else.
Was that a written rule, or was that just an accepted rule? We haven't been able to track this down.
It was local. It must have been written. It just, woman that married was automatically out the next year. I I don't know just how it was, whether it was from that minute on. The idea was, I think it was because of the depression or, well, it was in effect before that, that they had a husband to support them and they shouldn't take the jobs from the single people coming on who needed to support themselves. But it was a form of discrimination, of course. You get married and you can't have a job anymore.
Was there any resentment among the women for this role?
I think it was some. I don't think it was very strong. They did think it was rather foolish. There was more resentment when, before my time, when it was back in the 20s, women were paid less than men. And there was a very fine teacher over at South High School, Miss Fry, Miss Jean Fry, who wrote an article about this, and I think it was put in the Indicator, about equal pay for equal work and so on, and she wrote it so well. I think it may have been influential in changing that ruling about less pay for women.
By the time you got there, though,
it was equal by the time I got there. And also, there had been different salary scales in the past for elementary and high school teachers. High school teachers got more than elementary teachers. And that was changed. Yeah. I don't know when, but it's hard for me to pinpoint what decade these changes came in. That was a form of discrimination, too. An elementary teacher is worth less than a high school teacher.
What was your starting salary?
Oh, $1,215 a year.
Uh-huh. And what was
you'd be surprised what I could do with that. I went to summer school, everything on that, a little bit of money.
Where did you live when you taught?
On Madison Avenue, across from number 7 fire station, where Sparkle parking lot is now, the corner of Madison and Elm. The house is torn down.
And you lived with your family?
My family, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But my father had died in 1933, so I lived there with my mother.
What was your salary when you retired? I'm trying to get a range. Can you remember?
I think it was $13,200. But I had the super maximum I had because of 2 master's degrees. And they have a regular salary scale.
Sure. Can we go back a second to your student days? We'll talk a little bit about the student body. Would you have considered it a close-knit student body when you were there?
Very much so. And in my early teaching days, too. On lots of school spirit.
Yeah.
Very great pride in the school, the grand school. And they were proud of the traditions of the school.
Did you go to the football games?
Sure. Thanksgiving game, Rams out, that was the big deal. Freeze out there in the stadium.
What sort of extracurricular activities did they have there when you were there as a student?
I think a few clubs. We had a history club that was very popular and open to everybody. Then you had the language clubs, limited to advanced students in whichever language was involved. Glee club, they had campfire girls, and they had, I don't know whether they had scout troops or not. They had that. They had some illegal fraternities and sororities.
What sort of support did these various activities receive? Was it
very good support? These activities were considered the thing to belong to. Well, they had high Y, that was strong for the boys, and YOLASO, which was the corresponding YWCA group, very strong. They were important organizations.
What about dances? Did they have many dances, school-sponsored?
No. Didn't have dances. The only time they danced, I think, was at the senior banquet. Anything that was actually school-sponsored. Because I remember.
Who was the principal there when you were attending as a student?
Edwin F. Miller.
What was your opinion of Mr. Miller?
Well, he was strict, but I never tangled with him. I admired him as a good principal. He ran a very good school, taught ship, as they call it, and yet he had a human side.
And what way was that?
Well, I remember one time I was called out of class, and it was in German class, and I just immediately, what have I done? And I was sent to the office. I went up there, and I was ushered into Mr. Miller's office. There was another student in there, a girl, and he sat there with a twinkle in his eye and let me be scared for a while. But I didn't know what to think. He said, how would you like to take a trip? And I said, it all depends. And he had called me up to say that a couple of girls from the journalism class were to go up to Western Reserve, something they were having for high school journalism students. And I didn't know if I wanted to go. Well, of course, that was fine. And I went. But I'll never forget that little interview with him and how scared I was to be sent to the office. Nowadays, I don't think it bothers most of them at all.
In the 1920s, there was sort of a power struggle going on between the Board of Education and the Board of Trustees as far as control over rank. Did you notice anything?
I really don't remember. Well, in the 20s, I was a student, and I wouldn't have been aware, probably, of this trouble.
I think an interesting thing would be a comparison, or again, contrast, between the day you graduated from Rain as a student and the day you retired from Rain as a teacher. What were your emotions on these 2 days?
Well, the day I graduated was a day of celebration. I'm very proud to be a graduate, you know, big stuff. Mm-hmm. We had a class of about 250, I think. And the day I retired, I was a little surprised to find that I didn't have much emotional reaction. I think the emotional hump was over when I decided that this was going to be my last year, and I had lived with that so long that by the time, you know, for several months, and by the time I actually retired, I was over that almost entirely, and I didn't find it a traumatic experience at all.
Did you have any regrets about leaving?
Not really. I had other responsibilities that home responsibilities that I could devote myself to, and less to worry about. And teaching had become quite frustrating. It was a lot harder to get the kids to work and accomplish anything. So I can't say I didn't have any regrets. And every once in a while, I think now, well, here's something I'd like to share with an advanced German class, or a bright English class that would appreciate some literary point that I would like to bring up. And I imagine myself standing up there talking this over in front of the kid or talking to them about it. But in general, I just feel it was time to quit, and I did. Another thing that maybe doesn't bother some, but as you get older, you have Well, I can have a feeling that these kids think that, but you know that they think you're an awful lot older than you feel that you are. And this age gap enters into the picture. And some kids, well, there is this lack of respect. They will say things to a teacher nowadays that we would have been permanently expelled for saying. We just didn't do that. There was a lot greater authority when I was in school and in my early teaching days. I had things said to me that would have barred Rand School to a student for the rest of his days.
What's one of the
things? Obscenities, for one thing. Profanity. They call you anything. Anything that comes to mind. No holds barred. In class, out of class.
Would you report these to the administration?
I did, until I found that it didn't make any difference.
They gave no reason for not taking action?
It had become so common throughout the school system. And it's still going on now. Some of these older teachers that you have interviewed wouldn't mention that because it wasn't happening when they were teaching.
Again, I hate to try and force you to pinpoint something. Could you give an approximate about when you noticed this?
I'd say it came noticeable in, say, about the last 5 years I was teaching. I've been out since 72, and I talk with the teachers, and I know they're still doing it. And they say even down in the grades, even in first grade, these little kids are calling teachers obscene names. And it's just become so common that nothing's supposed to be done about it.
They don't even report this to the parents?
Yes.
What sort of tactics did you use to try and arouse interest in these?
Motivating students. In English is a very hard subject to motivate them in. And you try to tell them if you want to get a job, you try to use a vocational approach, that the better your English is, the better your chances are. Try to get them to read so that they'll get some appreciation of the literature. But it got to the place where, except in the college preparatory classes, and even was noticeable there, the idea of reading for literary merit was just out. Read only for information, and not even very much in that reading has fallen off. It's really too bad. I think it's alarming.
Did you notice your standards coming down through the years?
It had to. If you tried to maintain the standard that you had maintained in the past, you couldn't do it. You just had to give with the times. Although, the German department developed until we had finally had 4 years of German. We'd had 2 years for a long time, that was all. Then we were able to add a third year, and then finally the fourth year. And through the four levels of German, standards could be maintained, high standards. Then right at the beginning of the 70s or very late in the 60s, you noticed in your German classes that there wasn't this willingness to work and really plug and do extra things. Volunteer to get up a German club program as some of the other kids had done. Less creative spirit with regard to the classwork and the club work. What teachers always called it was watering down. You have to water it down. You get more palatable to the students.
Do you think Miss Peterson would have taught at Durand School in, say, 1960 or 1970, in that period? Do you think she could have stayed there? Do you think she would have stayed there?
Mrs. Peterson and Miss Baldwin were getting concerned if they lowering their standards back in the 30s. Excuse me. And so I often have wondered about that. What would those older teachers have done to try and maintain the standards that they did maintain when they were there? Whether they would have been willing to lower their demands, what it amounts to, or not, I don't know. I tell you, I think along with this lowering of standards, there were some other good things, some positive factors there. Maybe the children, well, the children were more relaxed. There wasn't this, here's the big authority here, and here I'm a little nobody here, and I sit and quake before this august person. It's more of a give and take between students and teachers, which I think is a good thing. And it's hard for me to say how that is related to standards, but it is. There is a chance for initiative on the part of the students. But I found with the classes I had in recent years, if you just wanted a student or a group of students to come up front to the front of the room and maybe each one say a line of something, just to do something a little different. They used to just fall over themselves to be the ones to do it. And it got so that nobody wanted to do it. You couldn't get them to come up front. They just wouldn't do it. And so there's your difference in motivation.
Did you notice a continuous of family lines at school as a teacher?
You get one generation right after another, or brothers and sisters. Of, yes, yeah, very definitely.
Mm-hmm. And this continued all the way through to, say, the year you retire,
right.
They maintain.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
So I was talking with a girl the other day who had just been married, and I asked her if she married a Rand fella, and she said, no, he'd gone to another school, and I said, well, I remember that name. And someone else said, well, maybe it was her husband's father. I said it could very well have been, and I think it was, because it was an odd name. So these generations are all represented. I mean, I got a jolt when I got the first student of a student. I thought, really, I really am getting old when I have a student of a former student of mine. I mean, a son or daughter of a former student.
Another thing that always seems to pop up is dress. Dress for
yeah,
school.
Yeah, all through the year.
Now, when you were a teacher, excuse me, when you were a student, was there any specified dress code that the students had to follow?
I think the mothers had more to say about that than they do now. And they sent their children to school. For the most part, in neat clothes, clean clothes. And I still remember Mrs. Peterson stopping a girl in the hall one day, and I wondered what was the matter, because I didn't see anything that she'd been doing anything. And what Mrs. Peterson was concerned about was the girl had a sleeveless dress on, and she thought it was inappropriate for school. But there were always fads. Oh, there was a time when the girls all wore big hoop skirts, and then there was the zoot suit fad. Do you know that? You remember that?
Well, I've
heard of it. Broad shoulders and a big chain hanging down, pointed toes.
Let's stop it here for a second, switch sides. How did the school react to these different fads?
Well, if it were something, we did try to have the kids dressed up. And as an example of dress, well, when the club pictures were taken, for many years, we required that the German club picture show students really dressed up. The boys were to wear a jacket, a shirt, tie. The girls would be neatly dressed. And when you remind them the day before, on the next day, when you had a German club picture, everybody have a jacket and tie, or you can't be in the picture. Or if somebody came without it, you'd borrow one from somebody. Then it got so that they just weren't going to do that. And that was part of their rebellion. We're not going to get a dress up for any club picture. All right, you know, along with it. It's not worth making an issue of. And so they dressed very informally. And then there was the movement for girls to wear slacks to school. And we hadn't worn slacks ever. And some of them started this business of wearing slacks. They'd be sent home, and finally they were permitted. Then it got to being allowed to wear shorts and mini skirts, and the whole idea of a dress code broke down pretty much. And it seemed, really, that making an issue of that was just asking for trouble. Except I myself think that people act to a certain extent in accordance with their dress, and you get better behavior from when people are dressed up, students are dressed up, than when they're in all dirty blue jeans. So.
Back again, when you were a student, just wanted to get you back that time. I had it written down.
You give me a little breathing spell.
You said that the students, or at least the parents, made sure that their children were fairly well dressed. So, what about the poorer students attending Rand? Do you think, or did they ever talk about, you know, this was sort of like a hardship of dressing properly?
There was some of that. I think that was a reason for parents wanting the boys to be allowed to wear blue jeans, because it was so much cheaper than a suit or even a nice pair of slacks.
This is all the way back in the 1920s.
Yeah, no. Oh, you mean when I was
yes,
in school? No,
yes.
No. They wore suits. And I don't remember that anybody was really so very poorly dressed as to be noticeably poorly dressed.
Would you say that you wouldn't even have noticed who was the poor in the school? There wasn't a distinction.
All look very much alike. Yeah.
There really wasn't a distinction then between haves and have-nots when you were going to school?
No, in appearance, I would think so.
What about just generally? Did you notice a division at all?
Well, the financially better-off students had, maybe an air of confidence that the others might not have. I'm in, maybe you aren't. In some of the organizations, the fraternities and sororities might emphasize that factor. That was the reason they didn't want to have them in high schools, the lack of democracy involved, that factor. But as to distinctions and the class distinctions, they didn't seem very important.
Okay. What was your opinion while you were attending Rand as a student? What was your opinion of, say, South High School or one of the other inner city schools?
Well, we just thought they weren't nearly as good as Rand. I suppose the people at South thought the same thing of us, that we weren't nearly as good as they were.
Well,
the term inner city school was just not known either. And, I know how you mean to use it.
Okay. Now, if you had, say, one thing to change about Rand School, Now, this is from both your experience as a teacher and your experience as a student. What one thing would you would change?
Well, it's hard to pinpoint that to one thing. One of the most important things to me is attendance. Been a falling off of school attendance. And if kids don't come to school and don't have to come to school, they cannot be taught. And to me, that is could almost be the key thing to start with.
Now, this attendance, how do they get away with it? I mean, how, say, in the 1930s or 1940s, when you were there, there was greater attendance.
It was a truant officer. There was punishment. You could be suspended for truancy, and so many suspensions meant expulsion. And there is, I believe, there is no such thing as expulsion anymore. And suspension has come to, among many of the students, be kind of a distinction. It's not feared as it was. And often they, well, I suspended for 3 days. I had 3 days vacation.
Now, from your memory of the 30s, well, your, you know, the 20s while you were a student there, and also the 40s and 50s, how active were the truant officers?
They were very active. I remember one, they were called, they stopped calling them truant officers, they called them visiting teachers, some euphemism like that. And I remember one who was very zealous. And when a famous orchestra came to town, they'd come to the Palace Theater on a stage, she would go down there and catch Rayon's students who want to show. And they'd go places where kids could be hanging out that were truant. Now the attendance has gotten so hard to check that there just isn't any attempt to do anything like that. Go somewhere and catch a bunch of them and haul them back to school. I don't believe that such a thing's possible anymore.
Is there any punishment anymore for them at all?
Well, sir, when I was teaching, maybe it's still the same way. The only thing you could do would be keep them after school, and you had to fight to get them in for these after school sessions. And that didn't seem very effective.
Again, another comparison and contrast. How well do you think the Rayon School prepared its students for college when you were there, when you were attending as a student, as compared to, say, when you were teaching in the 40s or 50s?
I'd say very well both times. In judging by where the students went to school and on into the 60s, they were admitted to the very best colleges and universities. And did well, regardless of what college, university, there were so many that would write back and come back and say how well prepared they were. And I used to say, you can get as good an education as you need at Rayon School right now, even the year I retired, I was saying that. It's available here for you. You can get all the education you need to be well prepared for college.
Do you keep up much with what's going on at Rayon right now anymore?
Well, someone. I talk with some of the teachers, and I go back to a few of their social functions, faculty functions. Occasionally, somebody retires and they have a party, and I get to see them that way.
Do you belong to the Alumni Association? Or?
I haven't been active in that. It changed too over the years.
Well, get down to that's about it. Unless there's anything else you want to offer, feel that
well, it sort of bothered me with that question of what would you change? Like one thing, and I come up with attendance, but that was just a big bugbear with me because I figured it was so fundamental. But the kids have to come to school, and they have to know they have to come to school in order to get anywhere with them at all. Because there's continuity to your course, And there is no continuity if they're here today and gone tomorrow and they're back.
Okay, but okay, that attendance would apply more to present day, true?
Oh, yes.
Okay, what would you have changed in the in your student days at the Durant School?
Well, I'm sure there must have been things I would have changed.
What complaints usually floated around from the students?
Nothing specific comes to me. I think maybe sometimes we thought that we had to work too hard, but that's not anything I would change.
How much time did you put in studying, usually, when you were going to high school?
What I actually put in and what you were supposed to do might not have always been one of the same. But I think they figured you should study about 45 minutes for each subject per day. And part of that time would be in study halls and school study periods. You might have a couple of those a day. So that would take care of two subjects. You had four, about an hour and a half at home would be expected to do it. Now you cannot get that kind of study out of the kids. They don't work at all in the study hall. And you'll see them going home in droves without a single book. I think the teachers feel that they just have to give it while they're there and not depend on work being done outside. Well, it's experience. They're up to try to teach us something.
Did you get any sort of sinking feelings? You know, I don't know if you want to describe sinking feelings or any, I don't know, disheartenment about the whole secondary education system.
Yes, you become very much disturbed. And one thing that, I don't know if you get it on there now, do you?
Yes.
Well, one thing that I didn't bring up, many of us were very much alarmed with the so-called progressive education movement back in the 30s. And they were trying to put into use or into practice some of John Dewey's, John Dewey's educational philosophy. And the way it was interpreted was that the child does not learn unless he wants to do what he's doing. And you learn by doing. That was basic to his philosophy. And I think it's true, you do learn by doing. So, and the child must want to do what he's asked to do or he doesn't learn. So the way it was interpreted was don't ask them to do anything they don't want to do. And that became so ridiculously permissive, the whole education system. Now, I was going through that, especially when I was teaching in the grades over at Harding School. And if they're going to write a theme, well, what do you want to write about? Baseball. That was all those kids were interested in, was baseball. So if you have to always cater to their interests, all they ever would have learned anything about, in school or out, would have been baseball.
Was Dewey's method endorsed by the school at all?
It was. You were supposed to be some kind of a fuddy-duddy if you didn't go along with it. I mean, that was what was being taught in the schools of education at the colleges and universities, this progressive education. And some good did come. The good features of it were incorporated in later philosophies. And this went on more or less until Sputnik. And we woke up. Here we are letting these kids do pretty much what they want to do and making it palatable, sugarcoating everything. And here the Russians have gotten ahead of us and our national pride was hurt and our school pride was hurt and parents, what's the matter? And we did have quite a revolution in our philosophy and teaching.
Did the administration ever take an active role in, recommending to you how to go about teaching?
Not too much. One of the nice things I always thought about teaching at Rand was the freedom you had. You were left to teach as you wanted to teach. And there wasn't much required of you. I'd like you to, if you could run your class and teach it the way you wanted to. Now, of course, you would maybe have an interview every once in a while, or be interviewed by you, which is kind of a little conversation with the principal. He might suggest you do this or that or the other thing, like some kind of experiment, or like speed reading, or something that was an innovation. And I would get so tired of doing the same thing all the time, but I liked some of those innovations, and they sort of wear themselves out. But I didn't feel that there was somebody over me ready to pounce on me for teaching a certain thing or teaching in any certain way. Quite a bit of freedom in conducting your classes.
When you entered the Rain School as a freshman, how many students were in your class, approximately, if you can remember?
In the school, all together, there was a student body of 1,800, which was too many. But that was because East and Cheney had not been opened yet. And we had half-day sessions. The building couldn't accommodate the whole student body at once. My whole freshman year, I went in the afternoon only. Your others went in the morning only. You had all your classes, one after another, during that half day. Then later on, well, then it fell off with the opening of those other schools, and then I guess it was the war babies that caused another peak, and it got up to 1,800 again. But then it would go down to maybe 1,100, 1,200.
Would you say that most of the students that entered with you as a freshman actually completed their high school education?
Most. It's hard for me to say. It seems to me they did. And at that time, and on into the 40s anyway, maybe through the 50s, more than 50%, maybe 60% or so, I could be quite wrong on these figures, did go on to college. It was a highly college preparatory school. And that fell off to the point where you're likely to have one college preparatory class per year where you might have had 10 to 15 college prep English sections in, whether you had that many in 1 year, I don't know, but there would be many college preparatory sections, and it dwindled down to the place where there would just be one per class. Because the school had changed so that it became largely vocational. That's really what it's becoming. And another thing that's on the increase is, though, what they call the EMR, educational, what do you call it, whether it's retarded. Educable, mentally retarded. Those classes are growing. More and more in those classes. More classes, more teachers in that field. Well, they used to be mixed in with other classes, these kids that just couldn't possibly keep up. And we thought it was a good thing to put them in where there'd be smaller classes and especially trained teachers that could concentrate on. But you do notice there's an increase in those classes.
Is there any area that I haven't touched upon that you would like to talk about?
Well, I haven't think of anything else. After you're gone, I'll probably think of 25.
Well, I think we'll just call us up and we'll come back. One last question then, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, when I say the Rain School, what one thing sticks out in your mind most? This could be from your student days or from your teaching days. What one thing sticks out the most in your mind?
An evaluation of the school or one?
When you hear the word Rain School, what immediately comes to your mind?
sounds funny, but past excellence. I hate to say that past, but it does, and it hurts to see that such a change taking place in school.
Okay. Anything else?
I don't think there's anything more.
Okay. That was very good. Thank you very much.
Well, you're very welcome.